Welcome to Info, where we talk about local politics and policy with Team Yimby and guest appearances from magical people like Chicken John. Welcome, Chicken John.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have this guest on today.
So tell me about yourself. Like, what kind of background do you have in local politics? We love your name. Tell us more.
My background in local politics is kind of similar to your own. I was drawn to local politics through disgust and rage. And, you know,
critical factors.
A kind of, you know, as a young person, you know, I was drawn to libertarian thought, you know, and you know, kind of like, yeah, why can't this work? You know, and then as you get older, you start to realize the complexities of things. And then when I kind of woke up to what was happening locally here, I kind of became an activist because there was these holes, you know, like everywhere you look, there's these holes, and like no one's shoring up the dam in this, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and there was a lot of places to activate on. It was really surprising to me, you know, when I started getting involved in local politics, how many simple, you know, problems, you know, things that are easy to remedy that were just incredibly complicated, incredibly, you know, people just having a hard time bridge building and getting together on things. And then when I, you know, you get older, you get a little wiser. And then when you start to realize the true root of a lot of the problems that we have, you know, you start to shake your head a little bit and you wonder.
Can you give an example of one of the things that you thought seemed simple but wound up being like impossible to coordinate on or difficult?
Yes, I can give you one of those things. So like parking tickets, right? So a parking ticket, like any law or rule, is either it's an enforcement tool or it's a deterrent, right? And So one of the first things I activated on was the parking ticket thing. And I kind of, it was just gross. It was $500 if you got your car towed. You know, you make a mistake, you don't read the sign, or you read it. And some of these signs are confusing, and some of them are missing, you know. And so, you know, when I went to fight the parking thing and the towing thing and stuff, it was incredibly easy to win. Because no one had ever done it before. And when I found out that no one had ever done anything like it before, it was kind of like that aha moment. I was like, wow, just people are just not, they don't see the possibility that they could, you know, fight and win. And, you know, so, you know, it was an easy win, and it took 14 minutes.
Wait, to fight one particular, like, parking ticket, or?
Oh, no. No, there was an agency called City Tow, right? That, you know, that does the thing, and now it's called Auto Return, right? So it's a different company, you know. It's like an outsourced company, and at the time, the City Tow people were towing cars, and then if you didn't have the money to get your car out, you would surrender the keys and the title to them, and you would sign a piece of paper, right? And that would be it. And they would take the car in lieu of payment, right?
Oh, my God. No matter how much the car was worth?
Well, I mean, just you know, I mean, what are your options? You know, you don't have the money.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have $500 today, so you just surrender the car. If your car's worth a lot of money, you go find the money somehow, right. You know, borrow or something.
Yeah.
Pawn shop or whatever. But if your car is only worth $300 or if it has, you know, lots of tickets on it, or if it has a mechanical problem or whatever, you just fuck it. You know, you just kind of surrender the keys. And so Auto Return City Tow started doing this thing where they were mining their past cars that they had towed for 10 years previous and charging all those people who surrendered their cars, sending them bills for, you know, $1,200 for storage and disposal, having to dispose of their cars.
Whoa.
Without showing what happened to the car. Did they sell it at an auction? Did they junk it? Did the junkyard pay for it? You know, what about the contents of the car? Nothing. Just like you owe us $1,100. And it was just like, no way, I'm not paying you $1,100. You took my car. I signed the thing. You said it was in lieu of payment. And they're like, well, that's not actually what it was said, blah, blah, blah. And it was a collection. It was a collection agency against us. And so I went to the city attorney, and I was like, hey, they're trying to do this thing. And what do I do? And the person from the city attorney's office, they're like, well, there's nothing you can do. I said, well, you're my attorney, you know?
Listen, yeah.
You know, like, you can't just let this happen. Like, yeah, we're aware of it, and there's nothing we can do short of filing a class action lawsuit. And I was like, okay, well, how do we do that? And he's like, it's very complicated. I was like, well, how complicated could it be? And he's like, well, you would need to get 700 people who are having got the same letter you did, that are having the same problem with the same company, and they would have to all be in agreement. And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So I went back next week and I gave them, like, I think it was 1,350 names.
Wow. Local political organizing hero. Okay, go ahead.
I handed it to him and I said, well, here's your people. And he was like, I can't believe how you did that in a week. And I was like, it was easy. It was not a big deal. You just have to get creative. And then we went before the judge. It was 14 minutes. The gavel fell and said that you can't collect this $55 million from the taxpayers of San Francisco. And then they had that was it. And they were done. They were out. And then they left. And now we have auto return. We have a different company representing us. There's no reason, you know, no good reason why they wanted that money. That was just money that they could get, you know, like they could send a letter, they could hire a collection agency, send a letter, and then some of the people would pay, some of them wouldn't. Maybe they would attach a credit report, maybe they won't, who knows, you know. But it needed a creative solution, and it needed an artistic solution. And it was, and the way I got all those people together was I took the fucking letter and I put it in the newspaper, and I wrote on top, I was like, did you get one of these letters? Go to this website, fill out the form, and, you know, together we can stop it and we won't have to pay.
Nice.
And it was like, wewillnotpay.org. And there was like a little form that my friend like made, and like you tell your story or whatever. And then I wrote, you know, if this helps you, send me a dollar.
Did people send you a dollar?
I made like $8,000.
Nice.
People were sending 20s, 100s. And stuff. And for some strange reason, people were sending naked Polaroids.
I don't think that's strange at all. That makes perfect sense.
I received 4 or 5 naked Polaroids from people who thought I was the coolest thing ever. So I don't know.
What year was this?
2002.
Okay, great. So it's the overlapping of the internet existing and Polaroids also still existing.
Yes. It was a long time ago. It was 15 years ago. And that was it was easy. You know, it was a good win. You know,
yeah.
Because it was easy. Because I just took out a full page ad in the Guardian and a full page ad in the SF Weekly, of which they gave me like their lowest possible rates, and it was great advertising. At the time, I owned a bar. I was like, send it, you know, send me a dollar, send it to me at the Odeon bar. And it was kind of a good plug there for the bar, you know, I'm a showman, you know, but it was not crass or egregious. And the ads cost like $1,000 each. And I ended up, people sent me, you know, six or eight, I can't remember right now, but it was good. It was a win. It was a total win. And, and then I continued to do that same thing over and over again. You know, where you take an artistic solution to, you take a problem, and then you like make a prank for the solution to the problem. So
okay, so you might as well tell us about running for mayor. When did you run for mayor?
In 2007, Gavin Newsom was running unopposed. So like there was no one else who showed up to run against Gavin Newsom, and it was a week before the deadline. I sent out one email saying, "Okay, it costs $5,000 to play. You know." Who wants me to run for mayor? And I received more than 5,000, so I took the 5,000 and I went and I filed papers to run for mayor.
Did you still own the bar at the time?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah, I was done with the bar. Don't own a bar.
Go on.
Don't do that. If you're thinking about owning a bar or whatever, just like rent a bar for the night. Owning a bar is hard. It's a heartbreaking way to make a living off other people's alcoholism. It's outside of my integrity. I didn't realize it at the time because I was thinking like the shows and the community.
Right.
And then it was like 5 years of like managing booze and vomit. So,
so I look forward to like there being more marijuana bars, you know, like there's much less heartache, I think, and if that becomes like a cultural staple.
There's at least probably less vomit.
Yes.
Not sure though. Some people do throw up when they're high.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm down. You know, I'm not a teetotaler, you know, or whatever. I'm glad that there are bars. I just don't want to own them.
Yeah.
I want to go to the bars. I want to go to the marijuana bar. I want to go to all the, I want to go to the raves. I just don't want to have them in my warehouse. someone else's turn. I've done it.
Yeah, you put your time in for the community.
I did. but for the mayoral thing, in the time that I pulled papers and paid my money and the deadline, 11 other people pulled papers. Oops. So I said that I would run. So I had to run.
So wait, do you think you gave, were some of them people that you gave the idea to that they were like, oh, Chicken John is running, I'm going to run?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay, copycats.
I kind of made like a big mess.
That's
I made a bunch of outrageous shit, blah, blah, blah. People were like, I went in on that. Like, look, you've got his name in the paper. So, but had I known that there was going to be 12 people running against Mr. Newsom, I would have not done it. I wouldn't have done it. Because it's just... like, I thought it was just going to be me and him, you know what I mean? And then...
you get
to
intimate kind of
campaign. I will admit that I went to one of his handlers and said, if I do this, will he debate me? And he said, yes, he will debate you. And then when there was 12, he was like, no, he will not debate you or anybody else because there's 12 of you. And I was like, fuck. Because I really wanted... I had this conversation that I had to him. First of all, I wanted to debate him at the junkyard, you know what I mean? Which I thought was a great... place for a mayor of San Francisco to go. It's where he's never been before. He'll never go again.
Okay, wait. Can you just tell listeners about what the junkyard is?
It's a place where you junk cars.
Oh, okay. So, okay,
junkyard.
Go ahead. Yeah, literally.
Not a dump. A dump is different.
Right. I just want to make sure.
I'm sure the mayor's been to the dump with the art program down there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Everyone. That's actually the transfer station.
I understand.
Okay. I just wanted the listeners to know. But the transfer station, everyone should go there. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll probably do that for infrastructure summer camp.
We did it already.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do it, but we're going to do a whole new series of them, which is why everyone should come be a YIMBY Action member. You'll get access to these fun, wackadoodle trips to visit infrastructure in San Francisco.
Yeah, and then you can correct people, too, about the difference between a dump and a transfer station. All right, go ahead.
Well, while we're plugging, let's just go all the way, right?
Oh, yeah,
so
plug away.
The transfer station... down on Tenali Avenue, has an art show, a closing show for artist Anya Olfelt this Tuesday from 7 to 9.
So today's Tuesday.
That's it. Today. It's tonight.
The 24th.
This isn't going to come out.
Shoot. No. Well,
so you should go to the Recology website and find out who the next wonderful junk artist is going to be and go to that show whenever it is that you're listening to this.
This is rude. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, so you wanted to go to the transfer station and have the...
I'm a car guy. So I'm a car, so it would be the junkyard.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, sorry, not
the junkyard. And I wanted to talk about the arts, and I wanted to talk to the mayor about the arts, and how about, you know, that, you know, the arts are the reason why we have the high tourism here, and that our, you know, that our culture is, you know, anything that happens here happens there and everywhere else, you know, and, you know, it all starts here, and... you know, and that, you know, there's, you know, tourists are all just people who are potential artists that just, you know, need to be converted and blah, blah, blah. And that, you know, that we need these little crucibles, you know, and that's was going to be what my mayoral run was going to be about, talking about like space and public space and space for the arts. And that the fact that the city owns, you know, 4 million square feet of buildings and 25% of it is unused, and why isn't that used for the arts, for temporaries, and, you know, can we just come up with a temporary smart lease, you know what I mean, that's just a, you know, blah, blah, blah.
There's still a lot of unused.
Actually, maybe.
Tons of unused stuff, yeah.
Maybe that's the right thing to do with all that retail space. What? Although I kind
turn
of.
Turn into art space, free art space.
Kind of, yeah, because, you know, we have this weird situation.
Why free?
Yeah, artists should pay.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think that we should. I mean, anything that's free is, you know, I mean, it should just be, you know, it should be, you know, fair and reasonable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some kind of weird incentive happening where a lot of these empty retail spaces, they've decided it's, for some bizarre reason, not worth their time to rent it out.
Well, it's not worth their time. I mean,
yeah.
They have the prop. So, you know, developers have to build retail space on the first floor of the new residential. And so we have all this, you know, retail space. And the developers don't need the retail space to break even. And so they hire property managers. And it's just on the bottom of the property manager's, like, list of things to do. Like, they don't really care that much. And so it sits there empty longer than you would expect. So that's something that this year we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, and like vacancy taxes. Like, I don't, like, that would be a case where it might be easier to apply a vacancy tax.
Well, I mean, you just have to look at New York City and what New York City did in the 80s for the landlords that were warehousing apartments and retail space and just implement whatever.
What did they do?
They did vacancy taxes. They also they started taking some properties from people, you know, for blight and other things. And, you know, blight is one of those words where there isn't really a good definition, you know, like one person's blight is another person's art, you know, so blight can be very effective with the correct, you know, people behind it pushing,
or very damaging with the wrong people behind it.
Totally.
I mean, it's kind of terrifying, actually.
Yep.
Because they'll blight, quote, you know, declare blighted perfectly reasonable neighborhoods if they don't like the people living there. And that's
correct. I mean, and then you end up with Orange County where you can only paint your house one of five colors. So you got to be careful. I mean, you know, these are extremes. But, you know, anyway, that was the conversation that I wanted to have. And that's what we were tooling up for. And
all these other assholes jumped in.
Well.
Were any of them reasonable candidates?
Well, tell us. Yeah. What was.
No.
No.
Okay. What were some of the other?
No. So, I mean, just give you. I don't want to say anything disparaging about anybody.
Oh, but, why not? Local politics is all about gossip.
Well, I mean, these people aren't politicians. You know, these people are. You know, once you get elected, it's fair game for me to drive my B-52 over your over your head and unload the TNT. But these people had a lot of heart. You know, they were like running for office. Each one of them had an ancillary. Agenda like me.
Okay.
You know, I sent out one email. I raised $45,000.
45?
Yeah.
Wow.
How do you guys get such a big email list or small email
older
list?
Than you.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Dang.
We'll ask you more about that a little later.
I'm
go ahead.
Organizing skills.
It was the right time for that kind of thing to happen, and at that time, I was kind of, you know, a lot of things were happening with me. I've just been. We had done a big project where we built a bunch of junk boats and went across the ocean. And New York Times did a big spread on it and stuff like that. So I was kind of...
We should do that.
Yeah. I don't recommend that either. But my mayoral campaign came about defending that money.
Yeah.
I became in battle with the Ethics Commission about that money. And it didn't actually have any content.
Please tell us more about that.
The Ethics Commission is one of those things where it's an organization that was put together. You know, every city has one of a certain size, and you know, the Ethics Commission is there to make sure that, you know, you fill out the form right and do these things and stuff. But you know, but they're not there to make sure you fill out the form right. They're not going to help you fill out the form. They're there to rain down like death on you if you fill out the form improperly. You know what I mean? So it became an instant adversarial relationship with them. And to comic ends where the director, John St. Croix, who's now retired, John St. Croix is a big, big guy. You know what I mean? And
like large in stature, 6 feet tall or something?
No, he's fat.
Oh, okay.
He's a big, fat guy.
So ordinary height, but like 300 pounds.
Wide.
No, he's tall too.
Okay.
You know, I'm, you know.
Both big and, okay.
He's big. He's a big guy. He's a big fat guy. He sucks, by the way. If you're listening, you fucking piece of shit. I hope I don't meet you in hell. He's a lying, egotistical, evil, horrible man. And
We'll keep that in.
Yeah, I believe that.
just a lie, straight up liar. He perjured himself under oath, and committed a felony. This is an election process, right? Our elections are supposed to be sacred, and this guy was not honoring this sacredness of election at all. It ended up where I was. He wouldn't speak to me. He wouldn't give any information anymore and stuff. So we had a lunch for everybody in front of his office where we roasted a giant pig, and invited him to come to, So that was the tone of the whole thing.
Is this at the Ethics Commission on Van Ness?
25 Van Ness.
Yeah.
Fourth floor.
Yeah. So you just roasted the pig in the hallway there?
Yeah.
Or in the sidewalk out front?
We didn't roast a pig inside a building. the point I'm trying to make here is that they saw that someone running for office who wasn't like a legitimate candidate and they were annoyed by it. I made them do work that they didn't have to do, and they felt that they were busy enough. So they just wanted to like make an example out of me so that no one else had the idea of running for mayor. Now, if you don't raise $1,000 in funds, you don't trigger the Ethics Commission. You only have to fill out one form of theirs that says, I am not going to raise more than $1,000, and then you're done and you never have to talk to them again. If you raise more than a grand, then you have to like go through this whole process. And San Francisco has a matching funds process in it. And they said that if I would, the law as it's written is if you raise $25,000 from $100 or less from 400 people, then you qualify for the matching funds. So I raised $25,000, I raised all the money, did all the things. And I qualified for $850,000 of matching funds.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Wait a minute. So the matching funds program, it's not one to one. It's you raise 45 and then you qualify.
25. We'll get you 850.
Whoa.
Whoa, let's just...
Or something like that. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
I don't think that's how we should spend public money, honestly. But maybe... Whatever. So I guess the point is...
It's like four times. Wow. But there's some front-loaded stuff. So anyway, it was a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
I also don't even know... at this point, the amount of money people are spending on a lot of these things, like, do they end up qualifying for matching funds a lot of the time?
Yes.
$25,000? We raised $100,000. I mean, so if one of us had run for mayor, we would have had tons of money. But go ahead.
Well, they changed the system after I broke it.
Oh, I see.
But I was the first person to ever do it. Had they actually released the funds to me, I would have been the first mayoral candidate who ever had received matching funds. My plan was to put art on billboards. That was what I was going to spend every penny of that money putting art on billboards. And one of the things that we were going to talk about is how the pollution of advertising doesn't really do any favors for anybody. I had just gotten back from that boat trip where we had built a bunch of boats in Slovenia and went across the Adriatic Sea, which is the Atlantic Ocean, by the way, and then crashed the Biennale, the art show, the Biennale, which is in Venice, with our beautiful art boats, and went through their canals and all got arrested. It was fun. But Venice wraps their buildings in cell phone ads. Mm. So if you have a building, don't wrap it in cell phone ads. That's another thing that you shouldn't do of all the many things that you're learning the lessons here of what you should and shouldn't do with your life. Tourism in Venice is down 60%.
Wait, since when?
It was like the same for a long time.
Right.
And then it started going down.
Dropping.
And then they started like, oh, shit, we need more money. Let's wrap some of these buildings in cell phone ads. And then they started going down more. They're like, we need more money. We need to wrap more buildings in cell phone ads.
And they were doing that in 2007. So when were you in Venice? Like 2006 or something?
Six.
Yeah. Okay. So they were already wrapping them in cell phone ads in 2006. And that was before the crash. So it like should have been...
Before the crash.
Yeah. So...
And then after the crash, they were tied to that fate. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that advertising deters tourism. Well, when the people are coming to a beautiful place, they don't want to see an ad. They certainly don't want to see, a building on a postcard that a kid is selling you to show you what the building looked like before they put the the cell phone ad around it. I appreciate that kid is an entrepreneur, and you know, I was kind of beautiful, but you know, it's just that didn't really work. And so I even started an organization called Billboard Free SF, which has kind of been stalled a little bit. We started this organization, and we like did all this work and pencils and papers and files and collected things and speeches and all this stuff. We collected all this stuff, and we went to the Board of Supervisors, and we were like, we got this. We're going to, okay, here's our plan. We're going to do that. And they were just like, oh, no, we'll just do it.
What do you mean, we'll just do it?
So they said yes?
They're just like, oh, yeah, 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 we'll do that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so winning.
So you won.
You won.
But now, I guess you're so used to winning, it felt like a letdown.
Yeah, it was kind of a letdown. Because I really wanted to, like, I wanted to use this organization that we built, but like they're like, oh yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, God, it must suck to be a good organizer.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that there might be a little luck happening here too. You know, it's just like at the right time, we like presented this thing, and then.
And when actually, what was that time? When was that?
That was a year ago.
Oh, okay. So this is a recent victory.
Well, I mean, it's not really a victory because
it was like so there easy. Was
still tons of billboards everywhere.
Oh yeah, it was not like overnight we're going to erase them.
Okay,
it's just very quietly. All the permits have been rescinded, so they can't put up any new ones. Mm. And then in 7 years, they have to start taking down the old ones. And it's like wasn't quite the win I was looking for because I wanted to like go there with like an axe and chop them down. You know, like
throw paint on them.
Yeah, but. You know, what we were trying, what our plan was that we were going to be like, okay, you have to take these things down in a certain amount of time, but we'll extend that time if you give us some of them.
Oh, I see.
And put art on them.
But there was nobody on the other side fighting you, so.
Nope. Mm. No one on the other side.
Okay, wow.
No negotiating.
So hard to feel bad for you in this case, but
sorry.
I'm going to try anyway, my empathetic imagination.
The mayor thing. Had some billboard stuff in it and some other stuff. That was the plan. And then at the end of the day, it was send out one email, raise $5,000 to run for mayor, send out another email, say, hey, if I raise 25 grand, I can get this 850 and we can put all this art on billboards and stuff. And as a joke, I was like, yeah, we can have like really cool parties with strange figs on platters. Like,
yes.
We're gonna spend all this money.
That's what politics is all about, though. Actually,
it was a joke. It was a joke. It was intended as a joke. And then
is there any actual rule against wasting campaign funds? Though?
Yes.
No.
Lots.
Wait.
Tons.
You can't all
over the place.
You can't bribe and whatnot. But like, if you say, I mean, proving that you're just using your campaign funds poorly is hard.
Yeah, it's hard to make a law against running a bad business and stuff, but there are laws, but there isn't any enforcement of the law. So you're talking about two different things.
Okay.
So there are laws about campaign finance laws and how you can spend the money. And they're incredibly hard to read. They're incredibly long, and they have tons of parameters, and none of them are enforced. If they would be enforced, they wouldn't be enforced by the Ethics Commission. They'd be enforced by the city attorney. And so it's like a whole thing. It's like a lawsuit, you know. So it's like,
so but like campaigns throw parties all the time. Like, how could you prove that your party with the figs was any less?
Yeah.
Valid
how does the figs specifically?
It was a joke anyway. First of all, but it was presented when we were, you know, before the Ethics Commission, when the director John St. Clair was
who I heard is a total piece of shit. Actually,
joke.
I don't know. Remember to tell me that.
he said that. He said that they shouldn't release the funds to me because not only were those funds garnered illegitimately, but that I've stated that I just want to use them frivolously, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but running for mayor is frivolous.
you know, ask Stuart, you know, how frivolous running for mayor is. And ask him if that increases the readership of your blog, because it doesn't, just like I told you, Stuart. You'll end up losing more friends than you make, you know? So you guys are policy wonks a little bit, so we can talk about the good parts of my mayoral campaign, of which there aren't very many. There was one event that we did that was good, right? And then there was two matters of ways and means. One of them is, in order to run for mayor, you can either pay the $5,000 fine, or you can... take a form, right? A one-sided.
Wait, sorry, hold on. The $5,000 fine. Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
It's not a fee, but okay, good.
It's not a fun. It's not a fee. It's a fine. It's a deterrent to stop people from fucking. So it's a fine.
I agree with you. Yeah, so, punish you for thinking that you might want to get involved locally.
So you can. There's a form that you can get from the Department of Elections, right? And it has like some writing, blah blah blah, at the top, and it has 10 spaces where you can get people to sign. And if you get 5,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 signatures, you don't have to pay the $5,000 fine, right? And so I took that form, I scanned it, right? And I put it up on the website and I said to people, print out this form.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sign your name.
Right.
Get 9 other people to sign their name, fold it 3 ways, and mail it to me. And then I'm going to have a stack of these motherfuckers, and then we're not going to have to pay this $5,000 fine.
Brilliant.
I signed the people come and thousands of signatures. And they were like, no, you can't do that because you printed it from the thing and it has to be that you have to get the forms here. So I have here that you've come and you've received, on this day, you came and you got one of those forms, which means that a total of 10 of these signatures could be valid. And I was like, I'm going to roll that piece of paper up and I'm going to put it in your nose. Are you kidding me? And I said to them, I said, well...
That's where sort of, yeah, the spirit of the law.
Well,
versus,
exactly.
Yeah.
I said, well, where did this piece of paper come from? I need to know the name, rank, and serial of the printer that printed out this piece of paper. Why is your printer superior to mine? Is your printer special? Is it magic? Is it made of gold?
Yeah, I mean, I said, it's not like in triplicate.
No, it's a white piece of paper, 8.5 by 11.
Yeah,
so okay. I presented to them the fact that I can print out the same shit as you. And there's no difference of it. And anyone who says differently is obstructing and is being an obstructionist. And you have an ancillary agenda where you just don't want people to either run for office or vote.
Yeah, could they prove other people's
they backed way down.
Okay.
Oh, they did. Okay, so they accepted your signatures.
No.
Oh, sorry.
They backed down after the deadline where you couldn't get it. And I had to pay the fine. Right. So that's. But they accepted it for future. People who are running for mayor, which I don't recommend, by the way, don't run for mayor. but I did win on that. That was like I went to them and I won, and then also I had a problem where they were saying that my funds to get to the matching, they weren't saying that the funds coming in were fraudulent, and like I had to give them back or surrender them. They were like okay, but the way that I got them. Wasn't eligible for the matching funds because it couldn't be proved that a lot of the funds coming in were from San Francisco residents because they were coming in through PayPal. And PayPal doesn't release the address of the person who's giving the donation to the receiver of the receiving end for privacy purposes, obviously, and stuff. And so they're saying, well, since we can't verify that, even if you verified it elsewhere, it could be that someone, John Smith, then there's another John Smith. You could have just found a San Francisco John Smith and matched names. That's what they were saying, which I can see what they were saying.
Yeah, and, which is why we use Act Blue and things that like force.
Oh, you don't need to worry about that anymore because I won on that.
Yeah!
So within I want to say it was like 2 hours and 30 minutes from the time that we sent out the note on, I guess it was Facebook or maybe Tribe. I can't even remember what it was back then. I was like, I need to speak to someone with, you know, who's a salaried employee at PayPal, who's in a decision-making position, blah, 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 blah. And it was, you know, we had the preliminary letter to the city within 24 hours, and then they implemented the change within 2 weeks.
Okay, so wait, a letter PayPal to the city from PayPal?
PayPal changed their platform to release for donations in political campaigns to release the address of the person giving the funds because by law, state law, you cannot give a political donation without giving your address.
Right.
1966, the U.S. Coinage Act...
So cool.
The legislation from the Coinage Act claims that you have to accept any and all legal tenders, blah, 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 right? That's the coinage thing. And then in 1988, the Supreme Court upheld a ruling saying that a park bench was an address.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, and this is also why people can do intersections and whatnot. Yeah, so for homeless people.
So using all that, they were like, okay, fine, all right, we surrender, right? But they only surrendered after the deadline for the matching funds. So we were still fighting to get the matching funds after we couldn't actually get the money anymore. We were still fighting to make it pressworthy so that, you know, people could, there could be articles written about it, and then we could set the precedents for other people running in the future who were legitimate candidates that had a chance to win. Stuart, the
I don't think he had.
No, I told him not to run. It was a waste of time. He's going to make everybody hate him. The you know, for legitimate candidates, you know, that have a chance to, I ran as a joke, you know, because I thought it was funny and stuff. But I think it really does muddle the water, you know, when it's not, you know, we need more legitimate candidates running, you know. So if there's no legitimate candidate, sure, go be a clown, you know. Mm-hmm. But if there's like people who actually have a chance to win, you know, that's not a good idea.
I feel like we're kind of in a new age. I know we weren't going to talk about national politics now, but of the idea of like joke candidates being legitimate. We have one now as president.
President Trump is had a movement of people behind him, a legitimate movement. He's a legitimate president.
But he started running not thinking he was going to win.
That is not true. He was always going to win. From the moment I knew that he was running, I knew that he would win. And so did a lot of other people who have been around a long
time. But the point is it problematizes the idea of legitimacy. You know, like one man's legitimate candidate is another man's like, you're just a reality show star and you're not obviously not going to win. I mean, who's legitimate?
It's a candidate to say. I mean, you were self-avowedly not actually running when you were running, right?
I actually had to defend my campaign to the Ethics Commission because I was running for second place using our ranked choice voting thing. I was saying to people, I want your number two, right? Which I made advertisements, which I put on porta potties all over town. Chicken John wants your number two.
So wait, so this is okay. Now I have a specific question, though.
I told you it was complicated.
So up till now, the conflicts with the Ethics Commission have been pretty easy to understand, right? But what some of these other things, why is it any of the Ethics Commission's business whether they think that you're running to win or not?
Good question. So the Ethics Commission, their job, as they, you know, as it is or whatever, is to make sure that elections have ethics and are run legitimately, and you know that there isn't monkey business with the money and all the other stuff, and also that there aren't conflicts of interest, you know what I mean, where there are things that you can do and things that you cannot do, and the rules are very clear. You have to be running to win. So if you could run to not win, right, then other people could run candidates to spoil against another candidate, right?
Yeah, so if or there's just like to enrich themselves.
Yeah, well, that's okay, but you have to run to win. So, like, the idea is that, like, if there's a Republican and then there's a Democrat and an Independent, the Republican's going to win because the Independent and the Democrat will split their side of the vote. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of intrigued by this because there's, like, always a Republican candidate, for instance, like, who ran against David Chu. That, I mean, you know, I know the guy. He never said it. Maybe knew he was never going to win, right? So, like, to say
you
that
you can't say it.
Yeah.
He cannot say it. You cannot say any of those things. But what I was saying to the Ethics Commission is, like, you're going to jail here if you do this. You know, we're going to press charges, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, it's a strategy to win. And they're like, you cannot have a strategy to win by asking for second place votes. I said, strategically, if I ask...
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you need first place votes too. You can't just get second place
votes.
All right,
so what was your argument?
The argument is that I have my base, which is going to give me the first place votes. And then I'm asking for everyone else's second place votes. And that's how I'm going to win. And it is a strategy to win.
Some people do it.
Well, I mean, so far two people have done it. Me and Stuart, 123, Pian Ed Lee, whatever.
Well, and then, but also like in supervisorial candidates, you know, the second half of the race is often people asking for your second choice.
Hasn't actually triggered a win yet.
No.
A lot of people have tried to experiment with it, but it's kind of
But the, just lukewarm. Because it doesn't work. I mean, just because it doesn't work doesn't mean it isn't necessarily a legitimate step. I mean, it's a dumb strategy because it's never worked. But
it's a great strategy, and it's going to work. And it's going to work on the right more than it could ever possibly work on the left, which is kind of one of the things that I told Stuart. I was like, if you do this, you're kind of opening the Pandora's box. You're teaching the moderates on how to do this thing. And so he was just like, yeah, I don't care. You know, whatever. So
that is exactly what his voice sounds like too. It's amazing.
But no, I like Stuart. I like Stuart. I like to give him shit. It's fun. It's fun to watch him squirm around in his chair and be like, "Well, that's not what I really meant to do."
The no, the one time I was talking to him, I realized he didn't know that affordable housing meant subsidized affordable housing.
Yeah, he
housing.
Has no idea. He's
oh my God,
no idea.
I was so mad. I just couldn't believe.
Like, at least that Amy Weiss filler. What's her name?
Oh,
filler?
Oh God, yeah.
No. Filler? No. No, now you're no.
Amy Farrah Weiss.
Amy Farrah Weiss. At least that woman, like, she came prepared.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she understands.
Well, she doesn't know what YIMBY means. I mean, that was the weirdest part about
it. It's a metaphysical yes to all of the experiences in the universe.
She's a hippie. She's a hippie. Yeah. But, I mean, I will say that, you know, I had one conversation with her online, which didn't go well. She came prepared. She did her homework. Like, she knew the issues, and she was able to, in a debate, she was able to, like,
have a coherent response.
She was there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I only agreed with, you know, half of what she said, but what she said eloquently. Unlike Stuart, who, you know, doesn't know, you know.
I mean, couldn't believe he's been advocating for affordable housing, and he didn't know that that meant subsidized affordable housing. And I was like, so you think the developers just, like, decide to build affordable housing versus unaffordable housing? I was like, I don't even understand, like, what... What?
I explained to him what a general obligation bond was, and he was like, "That's crazy." I was like, "Yeah, crazy."
Well, I guess I'm glad he didn't win.
He would have been a.
You think he would have learned?
Oh, it would have been really fun to watch him. I mean, it would have been fun to watch him learn to be, you know, mayor. It would have been really fun. If something were to happen and the world would collapse and the stars would align and he would have gotten to be mayor, what he would have done is hire a city manager.
Yeah.
Do we not have a city manager?
We do not have a city manager, and we desperately need one. We desperately need a city manager. If anybody knows a city manager or who knows anybody who can convince our mayor that we need a city manager, because our mayor sucks.
I know. He's got this mind of a bureaucrat that is a little difficult sometimes
he's
for me to understand.
He's a rumpled overlord.
Yeah, he is rumbled.
So, anyway, we're going to go back to the point.
Yes,
so.
Right. Oh, we're returning to the point. Thank you for moderating this discussion, by the way.
So, PayPal changed their platform for donations. So, it wasn't just... They did it for me, for my thing, but they did it because it was the right thing to do, and there are other people who are going to have this problem in the future, and they were just like, okay, well, you know, this is how change happens, and they did that thing. And so, that's what my... mayoral campaign was about those two things.
So you wound up doing a lot of reforms without actually winning.
We didn't do any campaigning. All we did was respond. Yeah. The entire, like, it took up all of our day, and I had to spend a lot of money, like, paying people to work with me and help me. And I have a free lawyer. My dad's a lawyer.
Right. I was going to ask you if you hired a lawyer.
My dad's a lawyer.
Great.
And so he was like
pressed
there
him into service.
With me. It was kind of a great bonding thing. And not like he had time for any of this nonsense, but it was cool. We like did stuff together, and he had his moment where he was like, he like had that moment where he was like talking to people, and he like was like talking about these the facts and these things, and he turned and he pointed to, it was like, you know, like the courtroom drama. It was kind of fun. It was kind of cool. And at the end of the day, the Ethics Commission they fined me $846,000.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you. So the fine, go ahead, again.
It was $2,000 per donation fine because I filled out a form wrong. I wrote something on top of a line, or to under a line instead of on top of a line. And then because I did that, that means that I wasn't actually able to accept donations. So any of the donations I received, I'm supposed to surrender to the Ethics Commission, and I'm supposed to pay a fine of $2,000 per donation, of which there were 400 and something donations totaling $46,000.
Okay, and this is the local ethics commission, not the FPPC.
Correct.
Okay, so the state ethics body didn't get involved in any of this stuff.
No, this is all just local piddly junk
nonsense
shit. And Mr. St. Croix looked me in the eye and pointed his finger at me and said, I will collect that $850,000 if you ever run for office again. So now that he's retired...
Oh, so he couldn't collect it from...
Yeah, did you pay it? Or
fuck,
were you...
No, I didn't pay it. How am I going to get $850,000?
Right. Well, actually, if you had gotten the matching funds...
Isn't it a coincidence?
It's a coincidence,
isn't
yeah.
it just a coincidence that was the exact amount of money, isn't it? So that's how real politics is played, is that the fact of the matter is that the Ethics Commission is actually an arm of the mayor's department. You know, it's under control of the mayor's office.
Kind of.
It is.
I mean, politically, not really, though, like, because the mayor right now is a moderate and the Ethics Commission is kind of progressives.
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I haven't kept up with the I've been focusing elsewhere.
Yeah.
But it's at that time that was happening
yeah.
to me. That was, it seemed like they were literally getting their orders and information. And we were even trying to leak information into the mayor's office to see if it would drip into the ethics thing and stuff, just to see if we could get. And it was incredibly complicated. And it takes a tremendous amount of time
yeah.
to do all those things. And at the end of the day, I got 12,000 votes and whatever. It was funny and, you know.
Okay, so you just didn't – I'm asking for a friend. you just didn't pay and they didn't take out a judgment against you.
But I also didn't run for supervisor the next year.
So they would only have tried to collect if you had run again?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball. And, you know, I don't have a time machine, so I don't know.
Okay, but in the end...
I didn't.
Because everybody else, they had collected against Mark Farrell. I mean, I guess everybody just pays.
Well, Mark is staying in politics.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's a little yeah. different.
They successfully got me to leave politics.
Right.
I also, you know, I you know, my mailing list was like 8,000 people
right.
the day I said I was going to run for mayor, and... You know, after the election, my mailing list was down to 2,500 people.
Mm. Because they were sick of getting emails from you? Or they were like, we actually hate this guy?
I think that they actually hated me.
Why?
I don't think that running for politics makes people like you. I don't think that people like that. I think that they were bored of the show because it became about this bureaucratic thing. So I'm like sending out posts
yeah,
on my
I
mailing
really
list.
Love, I mean, I would love to sign on to that. Like fighting with the bureaucracy is like what we
people
do.
People just were not interested. Well, remember that this was before the crash. Everybody was up,
yeah.
up, up. Everybody had tons of money,
right.
oodles, and there was sushi and cocaine and blah blah blah.
That affects your life.
And you know, and then after the crash, you know, everybody got a little, you know.
Well, yeah. they moved anyway. Home. Is one thing after the crash.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have, you know, I mean, the Ethics Commission, we found them relatively useful when we're, like, trying to figure out what we need to do in order to make sure that our PAC was, like, compliant.
Well, you're talking
and
to people, not an organization.
We're talking to people, yeah.
So there are good people
them.
In every
yeah.
Yeah.
poor
but
organization.
Then also, you know, we're aware of a lot of things that violate a lot. You know, there was, like, double drops of PAC lit and campaign lit from like opposition candidates that we noticed on that day. And the Ethics Commission is pretty much like, yeah, we've got a lot of complaints and basically we can't deal with any of it. And mm-hmm. and so it's interesting to me that they dropped the hammer so much on you when I know that they, you know.
I mean, there's a different director now.
Yeah.
No, so I think this whole, this
it's being. A better director now.
Yeah, better.
Anyone would be better.
We love you, new director of the Ethics
Commission.
A half an
onion would be a better director of the Ethics Commission than that fucking guy. I didn't like that guy. That guy.
I couldn't tell.
That guy.
Yeah. No, but I've learned a lot being doing this political thing now. And one thing I had never really thought about before is the ironies about so many regulations and reporting requirements. So we're not even running people, right? We do independent expenditures. We're like a group of citizens, and we go out telling our fellow citizens to do or not do certain things, whether it's to vote for someone or to canvass or to contact your elected official and, you know, whatever. So we're not even running. Mm-hmm. But we still, during election time, have, like, heavy reporting requirements. We have to do
huge
it every month.
Amounts of reporting.
Yeah, every month and then twice a year. And you have to, you know, whatever, in 24 hours if you do an in-kind donation of more than $1,000. And it takes up a lot of time, as you know.
Tell me about it.
And... you know, the way that these things, for the listeners, you might not realize, is structured is that when you're the treasurer of a PAC like we have, or if you're an actual candidate, you have personal liability. So you don't
need the treasurer of a candidate's campaign. A candidate can be their own treasurer, but okay, someone has to sign on as a personal guarantor.
Right.
That the laws aren't going to be broken and all that kind of stuff.
And wait, were you that person in this case?
I was not.
Oh. Oh, well, no wonder you didn't have to pay for it. This other guy's on the hook.
I had it. No, actually. Because this form happened before that guy was on the hook. So inevitably it would be on me and stuff. But it's more like criminal negligence, like if someone cooked the books or whatever. I harvested $46,000 in donations, and I ended up paying $18,000 in accounting fees.
Right. That's the thing. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Either you pay. So all this stuff is designed to keep big money out of politics. But if you have this much reporting requirements, especially when the downside of messing it up and doing it wrong is pretty high stakes, then you're actually on the hook and you have to pay a lot of money to professionals. So
it's just a disincentive for little fish.
Exactly.
Like the big fish can pay for the lawyers.
Nope. You got to stop all that. So that's not you're not giving the two. You're finding yourself at a fork, and you're seeing two options, but it's not true. It's
Go
not
on.
True. What we need is all of these requirements and all of these filing requirements and all of these accounting requirements, and we need to have some help.
Yeah.
That's
what
we
need.
If
there was a city lawyer who could help us,
there was a little bit of help.
So
that's the solution. The solution isn't to do away with the regulation. The solution is to have a little bit of help, or to have like an appeals process where if you get slapped with a $40,000 fine, you can go through appeals process and be like, okay,
look, this is really important.
We're a little fish here, and we just wanted to get this stoplight put in, and we've filled out the form a day late, and whatever. You know what I mean? So it's not like Exxon Mobil, who's trying to do a pipeline through
them.
A park, or whatever. These are the true solutions, and you'll find that everybody agrees with that. But
actually, no, they don't. They say they agree with it, but then when there's something on the ballot that increases the reporting requirements and liability even for small potatoes stuff, they vote for it, right? Like the expenditure lobbyist thing in November 2016 is a great example of that. An expenditure lobbyist is anyone, citizen, organization, business, anyone who asks the general public to contact an elected official in support of or against something.
Correct.
And so we now regulate expenditure lobbyists.
Correct.
And citizens voted for it,
correct,
even though that's a great example of the exact kind of behavior that we should not be discouraging.
I disagree. I was all for that law and any law like that. And I think that that law is just not enough. It needs to have the law, and then it also needs to also create a position where it's like there's someone who could kind of help the smaller people. And also another remedy to that is that the smaller fish need to fundraise for more money. People need to show up to small fish fundraising and give more money so that, we can do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
cough,
or
cough,
it should
cough,
be
cough,
free.
Cough.
Free to do that kind of thing.
Well, the problem is that if it's all just free, right, you know what I mean, then it's, and everybody, there needs to be some regulators in place.
Okay, so for expenditure...
If it was free to run for mayor, 1,000 people would run for mayor, right?
So what? Also, you can always do a time thing. Be like no more than 5 people, and then first 5.
And I don't mind the gathering signatures, because then, gathering signatures is a good way to sort of like, if you have enthusiasm but not money.
Well, I think that you should be able to gather signatures to pay fines as well.
Yeah.
Oh, to avoid fines.
Well, I mean, if you get slapped with a fine because you fucked up and you didn't fill out a form wrong, you should be able to collect 20,000 signatures, and then the fine goes away.
That's a great idea. Okay,
that's
we'll
intriguing.
Do that.
I'm not the first person to say that, by the way. That's not my idea.
Whose idea is that? That's intriguing.
I mean, that's just...
It's something obvious that everyone could think of.
I mean, it's just like, what... I mean, so the fine is it's a... Right? It's a deterrent or it's an enforcement, right?
Yeah.
So you're trying to enforce the law. It's like, if you don't fill out this fucking form right, you're going to pay this $40,000 fine. It's like, oh, you didn't fill out the form right. Pay the fine. It's like, I told you were going to have to pay a fine. Now I have to make you pay the fine because we're the government and we if I let you go, I got to let everybody go. It's got to be equal, right? So there's your enforcement tool, or you know, and deterrent and stuff. But there should be a way. It's like, okay, well, if 25,000 people from your district say that you shouldn't have to pay this fine, and you instead want to go spend your time knocking on door to door, blah blah blah, that should be a reasonable way of.
That's maybe a progressive. But then you get famous people. Like, what if somebody's just like, I don't know. I'm so worried about famous people in government right now.
Show wins.
Entertainment. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. But how are we going to make? I mean, while I appreciate like making politics interesting and entertaining, and like making it something that people care about, the idea. I mean, you know, right now we've got this showmanship. Stuff that's unhealthy for the democracy, you know?
We just have to get better showmen on our side.
I mean, there's different, there's liberal showmen too.
Yeah.
They're just like, you know, I mean, where's the liberal showmen? Where was the...
I know, but Bernie and Obama. Meat and potato people.
Well, maybe you do, but...
I do.
Most people don't. One thing that I've found about this ethics thing that's kind of amazing is that I actually don't think anyone really knows what the law is most of the time. So I've asked the same question to an employee in the ethics department, an employee at the FPPC, a lawyer, a candidate, you know, in the South Bay, and gotten all different answers.
No, what you got was you got a different interpretations of the same law.
Yeah.
So until such time that someone sues and creates a record of how a judge ruled after intelligent people on two sides of an issue have come together and built a case, presented it, and implemented, an opposition to each other to present a point, and then the judge has time to rule. Then, you know, until such time, anybody can interpret law.
Yeah. Which is dangerous, because all that stuff you're talking about is expensive. Right, it assumes that like the person.
Sometimes it's expensive.
Well, not if your dad's a lawyer, but if your dad's.
Well,
lawyer.
There are options for free lawyers that don't involve.
I know, but not maternity, for this campaign finance stuff, really. You know, free lawyers are like if you get accused of a crime or in limited cases, you know, you can have legal services lawyers, but they don't do this kind of thing. I think it is dangerous for. Different regulators and even lawyers and participants did not know clearly what the law is. Yeah.
The part that I was really intrigued by most during, you know, our whole sort of PAC stuff, don't worry about it, was listening to Sonia bitch about how...
it is intriguing to hear me complain.
Well, because I didn't want to touch the whole thing with a 10-foot pole because, like, paperwork makes me nauseous and anxious. But... that the ethics, the website where we're supposed to be submitting all the information would crash constantly.
Oh, it did. There was only one really bad time where that happened. I was so mad. Yeah, they have this thing called Netfile. And
I'm giving Sonia the opportunity to.
I just want everybody, if you have a second, just go Google Netfile and look at their 1998 vintage website. I mean, they really built this stuff in 1998, and like
there's no Yelp for this. Like, there's no place where we get to complain and say the government. This is one of these. I do think
there
like,
is a place where you can complain.
Well, the
well, you can go to the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah,
public comment.
And then everyone's like, "Here's the tiniest violin."
I know.
Sing a song and say, "I'm going to come back and sing to you every week until you fix the fucking website."
The Netfile thing is contracted with the state. But yeah, I mean, it's not popular to be organizing around campaign finance stuff, really.
To make it easier.
There's nothing that everyone wants to hear about.
I mean, that's what happened to me. I went in like, it's going to be great. It's going to be like this. It's like right. It's going to be amazing. And I did do some amazing, fun things. And I've done some amazing, fun things since. But it's not sexy. And it's not like something that's, you know, for, it's not for everyone. It's like, it's not for 99.9999% of it, you know? And I feel like it's like a duty thing. It's like you have to spend a certain portion of your time, right? You're going to, like, if I'm going to watch TV, if I'm going to go, like, watch Netflix and go, like, watch some dragon movie or whatever, right? Like, that means that I have to spend equal amount of time, you know, like doing advocacy work or something, you know, like if I'm gonna, that's a really great way to stop watching TV, by the way. If you want to do an hour for hour thing, you'll find that you watch much less television. But that's kind of, I mean, that's kind of, you know, there's a certain duty to it, I think, you know, and like to spend time, you know, and like arguing on Facebook doesn't count. The, you know, there are, you know, we hold a tremendous power, you know, as individuals. What I like to remind people is that if you're implementing an idea, a political idea where you're trying to change something, make something better, or trying to stop a bully from, you know, throwing someone out on the street, or whatever it is that you're trying to do, you implement a law or repeal a law that is no longer useful or was put in place, you know, through nefarious and or mean-spirited means, or whatever you're trying to do. When you're moving forward, when you're like gathering information or organizing, you represent 10,000 people. You are 10,000 people strong. Like, no questions asked. Any advocacy you do, you have an automatic army of 10,000 or more people behind you. So it's like when you're doing that kind of work and you're doing those kinds of things, that's like a leadership kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's a good feeling and all that stuff, but you shouldn't do it because it feels good or whatever like that. You should do it when you do it because it's you know, it's how you kind of pay the rent for having a democracy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the premise of the YIMBY party was, I mean, why I started getting involved and whatnot was knowing that, like, you know, I received this letter in the mail from somebody who is opposed to a two-unit housing project. And I knew that while there were many other people who agreed with me that this was fucking ridiculous, all of them had taken this stupid letter and just thrown it in the trash, right? Mm-hmm. And that if I got up there and said, this is outrageous, there were going to be a whole lot of other people who were like, yeah, she's right. That is outrageous.
Well,
and
you know,
like,
it's a timing thing. You know what I mean? So those people threw it in the garbage doesn't mean that they suck.
No, it just means they have a life.
It just means, like, that they picked another battle. Right. You know, maybe the day before they picked another battle, maybe a year before, maybe 10 years they've been fighting that battle.
No, but I mean, like, it means also that they're ready, that as soon as I pick up the flag, there's going to be 100 people who didn't know what to do with their frustration who are going to start cheering, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is like the second you pick up the flag and run with it, you know, you're going to find your army behind you. Yep. They were looking for the flag.
Yeah, also, the way that opposition stuff is written is it's always like, if you oppose this, then do this thing. And so if someone's like, I don't oppose it, then there's no directions on that flyer, you know, so you just kind of do nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, when I'm speaking in favor of projects, I'm always thinking of the people who would live there if the project existed, and also the literally 250,000 people that moved out of San Francisco in the last 5 years. They're not going to show up because now who knows where they live. I mean, people are being displaced to New York City, which is the craziest thing to me, that you'd be like, it's cheaper in New York.
San Francisco is now the most expensive housing in the country, and, you know, number three in the world, you know, next to Abu Dhabi and what's that place? Kuwait.
Yeah. I was looking
so
also
much for anti-Manhattanization.
I know, and then I was looking at the that old Washington Post article that has the sort of, like, breakdown of density, and that the city of New York City, you know, it's a boroughs, you know, incorporated geographic area, but, like, is actually less dense than us, and so everyone's, like, all panicking about the Manhattanization of San Francisco, but it's actually less dense
overall.
Overall.
Weird.
Yeah.
Much bigger. Yeah.
Much bigger. Yeah. I mean, we should incorporate in a much larger area and have an integrated public transportation system. And let's add to the list of problems that we hope to solve.
24-hour BART.
24-hour BART. Soon.
Yeah.
And by soon, I mean in 15 or 25 years.
And marijuana bars. Yeah.
Sure.
And better signage.
On the streets?
On the streets.
I agree. Oh, that's actually something that we can take into our own hands, I feel like.
Just make the signs and put them up.
Yeah, just like SFMTRA.
You can have all of those signs made at any sheet metal shop.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Just
actually
have the sign made, drill the hole in it, paint it, whatever you want it to say.
They won't even take it down because no one will notice.
It'll take 10 years before you even notice.
Yeah.
It is so frustrating because you'll be at like a big four.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
And there's one sign and I'm like, is everybody else? And this makes me like kind of think that it's a secret San Francisco native thing. Where they're like, ha ha ha, we all grew up here and we know where we're going, and you moved here a couple years ago, and we're
just
gonna,
I think that's
all
on you.
I know. Luckily, I have my little GPS phone. So
yeah, with the proliferation of GPS phones. towns, you know, they're going to see that, you know, a lot of signage is going to start going the way of the dodo.
Which is a discriminatory practice against low-income people that
low-income people have phones.
But they can't all afford,
what, like, that they have phones, or that it's...
I just knew that you were going to interrupt me with the low-income thing before I could say...
I'm sorry. I am an interrupter.
Before I could say that in the future where smartphones are free.
Oh, I like it.
But actually, did you guys read The Phantom Tollbooth as kids or yesterday?
Yeah, but I don't remember how it connects up to this.
This is exactly... So there's a world that he visits where everybody just, like, I don't know what they're doing. They're, like, looking down when they're walking or something, or they're, like, walking really fast. The point is that they're, like, not interacting with their surroundings, and there are no surroundings. Milo gets there, and he's like, why is the surroundings just a gray mush of... you know, fog of nothing. And it's because no one was looking around, and I find that actually happening all the time.
Well, I would like to see a future where a sign, a street sign or like a stop sign or a speed limit sign has to go through a artistic review committee, you know, and, you know, has to pass muster to its aesthetics as well as its... as its
clarity,
function, you know, form and function, like the way things used to be, you know, like handles used to be beautiful, switches used to be beautiful. Now everything is utilitarian and cheap, plastic and crappy.
Well, maybe in the age of basic income, people will be able to spend all their time making stuff look nice. But speaking,
Well, I was gonna say we should, well,
we should wrap up.
Yeah,
but yeah, so just before we go, you have a whole other way you spend your time besides being an excellent organizer. Can you tell us about the Institute of Possibility?
The Institute of Possibility is a nonprofit here in San Francisco that we take on like big, hard things, you know, like the Billboard Free SF thing, which
well,
was
well, not that hard. You won.
Big and hard. That wasn't. That was kind of disappointing. There's no fight there. And, you know, we also, we throw the a festival called Camp Tipsy.
Yeah.
Which is hard and big and annoying. And it's a possibility engine, you know, where you can come there and build all kinds of fun stuff. You know, we also do, you know, behind the scenes advocacy work. Like we, you know, a couple of people were very involved in the response to the Oakland fire. And, you know, different stuff like that. We can't support candidates.
Because you're a C3.
Yeah, we're 501c3. But so, you know, I own a small theater space on Cesar Chavez. And it's like a place for shows and events and stuff. And the SFIOP will do like 5 or 10 shows a year. You know, different fun things. You can... There's a website you can sign up on a mailing list if you'd like to know about those.
Yeah, did you have the Smash Stuff event? Was that the Institute of Possibility, or was that something else?
We advertised the Smash.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't our event. It was just like, here's a cool thing you can go to, you know. So, on election night, they had an event where you went to this place, which was basically a junkyard, and they let you, like, get hammers and... baseball bats and like smash cars and smash computer monitors and smash things.
Yeah, that's the type of art I'm talking about.
Well, we'll include the links to all the website and stuff in the show notes. It was fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so
having you here.
Much.
This was super fun. And I hope
we learned
Broke
a lot.
Ass Stewart is listening.
Hey. Or I hope he's not. I don't know. Yeah, thanks.
He loves to have his name in books.
Yeah, that's true.
Any of
like they were talking